Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Theater Podcast. I'm your host, Alan Seals, and our guest for this episode is Glenn Turman. Just an amazing, amazing individual who has been in the business as a performer and actor for 50 plus years. Very timely between the time when we recorded and when this episode is released. Sidney Poitier died. He worked with Sidney in his Broadway debut at the age of 12. We get into that story. Just, oh my gosh, an amazing, amazing story. There's a couple times in the interview where he refers to my little one, my son, because what got edited out of this final interview they're listening to is one point when my little guy bursts into the recording studio here and asks me a question. So my son got to meet Glenn and Glenn got to meet my son. So if you hear the little one, that's what he's referring to. Glenn is one of those people that simply by exploring the things that he personally wants to explore and supporting the things that he finds important, he's leaving this trail of influence, of inspiration and education behind him for everybody he touches. It's incredible. And then, in case you didn't know, he's one of the stars of the brand new ABC show, Women of the Movement, which just came out on January 6th. You have to watch this show. Of course, as you probably know, it stars Adrienne Warren and a whole slew of other Broadway names. I've rambled on long enough. I know you want to hear from Glenn, so let's just jump right into it. Everybody, please enjoy this episode with Glenn Turman.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here you go, one, two, three.
Today's guest is an Emmy Award winner who made his Broadway debut at the age of 12, originating the role of Travis Younger in the 1959 production of A Raisin in the Sun alongside Sidney Poitier and Ruby Dee before diving into an incredibly successful TV and film career spanning over 50 years. He has received critical acclaim for his roles in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, How to Get Away with Murder, of course, both alongside Viola Davis, David E. Kelly and Jack Bender's series, Mr. Mercedes, The Way Back, opposite Ben Affleck, Justine, produced by Ava DuVernay, a film in which he also executive produced. He's directed episodes of Hanging with Mr. Cooper, A Different World, and The Wayans Brothers, and now is the newest face for Beyoncé's Ivy Park denim line. And of course, now is starring opposite Tony Award winner Adrienne Warren in ABC's Jay-Z and Will Smith produced Women of the Movement as Mo's Right. Holy cow, Glenn Turman, welcome to the Theater Podcast.
Alan, how you doing, baby?
Oh, dude, I hope I didn't drop any names on your foot there. That was a lot of names that just got dropped.
Yeah, my foot's hurting.
You have done so much, so unbelievably much, and I mean, gosh, I don't even really know where to begin. Let's start with a fun one, though. How many people get to work with Beyoncé? What was that like for you? How did that even come about? Like an actor for a denim line, right? Because like you got a little cowboy in you.
I got a lot of cowboy in me. I got the buckles to prove it. and the horse feed bill, too. And she knew that, Beyoncé did. So at dinner, we were talking about that. And she was saying that she had just finished a rodeo collection. A new collection was going to be called Rodeo. But that she was needed a young lady who was beautiful and who could ride to model and finish out this particular segment of her. I said, my granddaughter used to be a model. She modeled when she was a youngster, but she's also my kid. So she grew up rodeoing, she barrel raced and rides very, very well. And is a cowgirl. And so I said, and she's beautiful. So she said, would you think she would want to do it? I said, I'm pretty sure she would want to model some of Beyonce, your line, B, I'm pretty sure. So then we got that going at my ranch. We've got a small ranch not too far out of side of LA that we've had in the family for quite some time now. I don't know if you know Tina Lawson, which is Beyonce's mom.
Mm-hmm.
We were dear friends, my wife and her husband and all of us. She kind of said, "Oh, Glenn, look, I just happen to have a jumpsuit here. Let's see if that fits you." You know, this is at the ranch. You know, I thought I was just supposed to hold the horses, you know, and shovel horse poop, you know, to get on the set. But she kind of came up with this idea, sliding me into this jumpsuit and thinking that I might, you know, be able to model this and so on. And then next thing I know, I'm the spokesperson for Beyonce's new line, the Ivy Park rodeo line. So there I am.
Crazy cool. And I loved it. You know, you're just like, you're having dinner with Beyonce and you just happen to be Tina, you know, Tina Lawson's like bestie. So that's super cool. We'll skip all that, but that's, that's very, very cool. But I want to dive into what made you originally, like at the age of 12, right? You're originating this role on Broadway in 1959. Like, what got you into theater? Because you're in New York at this time, and then you move out to LA a little while later for TV and film. But what was the original impetus for like getting into performing in the first place?
My mother was a single parent. I grew up in an area called Greenwich Village in mm-hmm. New York, in the West Village, back in the 50s and early 60s. And she moved there as a single parent from a place in Harlem where I was born. And I moved down there at about the age of 8. She was a part of what you would call probably a bohemian lifestyle of that time, which was really nothing other than people who were sort of intellectually gifted in their concerns about issues in the country, music and folk singing and poetry. And so her friends were James Baldwin and Lorraine Hansberry, who wrote A Raisin in the Sun.
Hmm.
It was Lorraine Hansberry who suggested to my mother that I might be right for a role that she had written in this play called A Raisin in the Sun. And would I try out for it? And I had no inclinations of doing that, but Mom presented this opportunity to me and I said, And I said, I don't know, you know, okay, I'll give it a try. And I got the part. You know, because I got the part because I didn't know what an audition was. I didn't know I was competing.
You just went in and did your thing. There.
You know, the part I thought was mine, you know. So, I don't know what these other guys are doing here, but this is my part. There's, you know, only one part for a little boy.
Wow, that's so me. you just fell into this career without realizing what you were doing. That's insanely cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Was it you? Is it your mom? Are the two of you talking? And you're like, you really got some talent here.
A woodshop teacher in junior high school suggested that I try out for the performing arts high school, which is called LaGuardia now in New York. Back in those days, you remember the movie Fame?
Mm-hmm.
That was the year that story was about my graduating class.
Wow.
Fame. And, so I ended up at that school. I passed that test and got into that school. And I did well because I was a terrible student all through school. But I did well in that school at that time in that class acting. And I graduated top of the class. And that's when I said, hey, Mom, I guess I'll try this stuff, you know, for real. And of course, as soon as I made that declaration, though, Alan, I never worked again. I didn't work again.
I didn't work for years.
As soon as I made that declaration, I didn't work. I couldn't get a job. I couldn't get arrested. You know, I was put through the test of fire. Oh, you want to do this, huh? Yeah. Okay. Here you go. You thought it was that easy? Well,
how long did you stay in New York before moving out west? Then
I graduated in 1965, and a high school teacher of mine, an acting teacher of mine, brought me to California in 1968 to do a stage play at a place called the Inner City Cultural Center here in Los Angeles. And I came out to do that. I was about to do that play for a few weeks, and then I was about to return. But when I got off the plane, man, it was 76 degrees here in New York. When I got on the plane 5 hours earlier that day, it was 3 degrees below zero. So when I got off that plane, I said, I got to figure out a way to stay here in California. I'm not going back to that cold. That's crazy. And here I am 50-something years later.
Wow. You mentioned you got a ranch outside of L.A. Where, like, you were born in Harlem, grew up in Greenwich Village. Two places that don't really lend yourself to being a cowboy. Ranch, yeah, so talk to me about that, and then we'll get into the business stuff.
I'm giving up key points because I got to, for you, I'm going to let you know, I got a documentary coming out about my life that I just finished. So just finished it. And these stories will be in that documentary. But to answer your question, I just always loved horses, even in New York, you know. I used to play hooky in school and go up to Central Park and shovel horse crap in the stables up there in Central Park if the man would let me ride a horse, you know.
Wow.
I just always loved it.
That's great. I love that you've taken like this love, this focus for animals, for horses, and just turned it into this whole lifestyle, which has then, you know, led you to being a model for denim jeans and get your granddaughter and all this stuff. It's just I love how it's embracing chance, right? It's taking advantage of the opportunities right when they come to you and just running with it and seeing where it goes. And
where it goes.
And it sounds like you've done that your whole life. And you've got this incredibly successful career based on embracing chance, embracing opportunity. And as soon as things are presented to you, you just run with it and you let it go wherever things are going to go. I love that. I love people that do that because there's a fear that you have to overcome to be able to do that because it's all unknown, right?
Yeah.
So when you look back at your career, you're an executive producer alongside Ava DuVernay, and you're a successful actor with all these awards under your belt buckle, and you've got starring roles alongside some of the biggest names ever, you know, and you're like besties with Viola Davis and all these people, now you're working alongside Adrienne Warren in this incredible show, Women of the Movement, and I'm so impressed with how you have stayed so focused, but yet so diversified all at the same time. So how do you approach what you are working on? How do you decide? Because it seems like at this point you can do anything you want. What are you looking for?
Well, I still got horses I got to feed. So one thing's a constant, you know, horses eat and they shit. You know, so you gotta feed them and you gotta clean up after them. So I still got to do that. So I'm still working. I still love working. And what has been wonderful is at this point in my career, some wonderful opportunities have come. You know, some great storytelling is happening at these days. And I'm glad that I've lived long enough to see that we've gotten as a black people to opportunity to tell some of our stories from our point of view.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little different than from the times that I kind of started it. Although Raising in the Sun was about spearheading that opportunity, but in between, it's not been a crystal stair to make that happen. You know, so these young people, you guys, you know, this being your world.
I'm 41. I'm not young people, but yeah, I hear you.
Hell, man, these shoes I got on are 41 years old.
Fair point.
So to see, for you guys to be telling stories and doing things and making the change and include me in your storytelling, you know, that's I'm really very, very pleased and blessed to be in that position. At the same time, I just think that somebody has to have the truth, the experience, you know, have lived the experience. And I guess it's my turn to be able to tell from that experience. You know, they were asking me about Women of the Movement. Do I remember that time period? And I do. And I guess there are not a whole lot of actors around that can say that. Mm-hmm. You know, that are still doing it, you know, at a certain level. But yes, I was there, you know, in the 50s, in 1955, you know, I was there when my mother panicked when I disappeared as a prank at 8 years old, you know, just hiding from her, you know, and the whole family panicked, you know. And why did they panic? Because on the newsstands, there were pictures of Emmett Till mutilated in an open casket that his mother insisted on so that the nation would wake up to the atrocity, you know. But what did that do for mothers of that time? You know, my mother was one of those mothers. She lit into me like I don't know what, you know. I can recall that story. You know, I can recall that time.
Well, it's obviously so much about what's been happening in our culture in the last few years that indicates that we have come a long way, but we still have so far to go.
More things change, the more they stay the same.
So the other day when I went to see Trouble in Mind with LaShans on Broadway, that is Alice Children's Broadway debut of a play that she wrote decades ago. And she's now passed away and obviously is not going to see this. But if the costumes and the set was not set in the time period in which it was written, then I would have not known that it was not supposed to be in that time period. Because unfortunately, the problems that we are seeing on stage, that we are being presented with, are still happening just as much now as they did back then, just in different ways.
Well, you're absolutely right, Al.
We're going to take a short break. Stay tuned for more of the episode. Women of the Movement. Let's talk about that a little bit, because you play Mose Wright, who is a real-life civil rights movement leader and great uncle to Emmett Till. So you were just saying that you remember these times firsthand, and you're starring opposite Adrienne Warren, who is young enough so that she did not remember these times firsthand. When putting together your character, when putting together the story and working with her and the other cast, were you able to, I guess, what sort of guidance? And I assume there's a bit of inherent leadership that comes out of you dealing with a cast of people who didn't experience this firsthand in real life.
Well, to a certain degree, yeah, because, you know, kind of grounded in the fact that I did come through that time period. You know, so there's a certain amount of grounding there. There's a certain amount of leadership, I guess you could call it, for lack of a better word, that comes with that. You know, we had a gifted, very, very gifted cast, you know, and company. What I was not afraid to do was adopt the attitude of the time. There was an attitude that was expected of you of those times, being a Black man, a Black person. And what was most difficult for the youngsters that were with us was to adapt the attitudes of that time. Because the first thing you'd say, you know, is say, why do I have to get out of the way? I don't have to move for this white man. But of the times, yeah, you did. You had to step back off the sidewalk. You see, you had to lower your eyes. You couldn't look somebody in the eye. You did have to lower your eyes. You did have to play small. In those times, you know, and so as actors, you're going to have to do that. You know, I know it's hard. I know it's hard, but think of how hard it was to live it.
So today is January 6th as we're recording this. This is when Women of the Movement comes out, which is also the 1-year anniversary of the civil rights uprising, or the uprising on the Capitol. Sorry. There's a lot of emotion going on in the country right now, in the world right now, specifically today. And this show is incredible. It needs to make people think, and it needs to make people realize. And as you were telling the story a second ago about having to play small and having to move out of the way and not look people in the eye, like I was starting to tear up because I feel... I don't know what to say right now, if I'm being completely honest. I don't know what to say. As a white man right now, I don't know what to say to express how much I dislike the hate that people of color in this country have to experience. It makes me angry. It makes me mad all the time. And I don't know. As a teaching moment for me and for those listening right now, what should I say? What can I say? What can I do to help? What can I do to I guess I'll stop right there. What can happen right now to have people learn from this?
Well, you have a wonderful opportunity, a blessed opportunity, because it all starts with that little fellow who walked in the room. That's your responsibility. Your responsibility is to make sure that he does not adopt the attitudes that you are having such trouble with in terms of accepting. You cannot let him accept that hate. Mm-hmm. That's your job. That's what you can do.
Yeah.
You got two of them, right? There's two of them now.
Two little boys. Right. Yep.
They might go to school and somebody else and somebody else is going to say to them, you know, oh, you know, January, you know, blah, 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 blah. Let's go storm the Bastille, you know, and you knowing better. I've got to instill in them the ability to say, no, fuck you.
Mm-hmm. in five and a half year old language, yes.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But you get my point, right?
Yes, absolutely.
That's your job.
Yeah, that was something that I realized years ago was that racism is inherited.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so anti-racism also is inherited.
Yes, absolutely. It's inherited. Yeah, that's what you do.
Yeah. So thank you. I mean, I will take this to heart. I mean, there's really no easy way to pivot out of this conversation, but I actually want to bring up something that is maybe semi related. Was that I read that you auditioned for Han Solo?
Yeah,
and the original. The original.
Yeah.
You got it?
Yeah, he was going to hire me. Lucas was going to hire me. But because of the same subject that we're talking about right now, yeah. Where you didn't want there to be a relation, an international interracial relationship with Princess Leia, is that her name?
Yeah.
So I didn't get the job. Harrison Ford got the job. So Harrison Ford owes me a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does.
Come on, Alan, let's go get my money from him. Let's go get my money, brother. Come on, man.
Have you ever talked to Harrison?
Help me kick Harrison's butt.
That's
the truth.
I mean, it must have stung at the time. Like now, so many decades later, is it still something that you're like, man, that is something? I mean, obviously, it was a life-changing experience. But looking back on it, what do you think about something like that where if it had gone just a little bit in a different direction, who knows what life would have been?
Well, I've been blessed. I've got my aunt had a saying that used to go, what's for you is for you. I don't know how to spell that, but that's what she'd say. What's for you is for you. What's for you is for you. That's the good and the bad. And there's nothing anybody can do to take away and keep you from getting what's for you, you know? So I don't linger on it, what anybody else has. You know, I only accept what I've got, what was for me, and I do the best I can with what I got, what came for me. That's all I care about. You know, I don't compare myself. I don't begrudge anybody. That's for them, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the first roles that I really fell in love with you watching was in House of Lies.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm a Don Cheadle fan till the end of days. I love that dude. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, who's this guy? Who's this badass dad? And then I looked you up and I was like, oh, this guy's great. So that was the first times I really started following you. And this is of course years ago. And then working with Kristen Bell and I mean, you've got other things that you've done, other roles in Scrubs and Hawaii 5-0 and Twilight Zone, the original, right? Matlock, right? And looking back at this illustrious career as an actor. We're only talking acting right now. We're going to get into the directing and producing and stuff in a second. But as an actor, do you have any standout moments like this or standout experiences working with like the Ben Afflecks and the Don Cheadles? And
well, you know, when I was coming up, James Earl Jones was the man. You know, he was the one we all us acting students wanted to be like James Earl Jones. And I had a chance to work with James Earl Jones and in a movie called The River Niger with he and Cicely Tyson. The way they played my mother and father. And so, you know, I pretty much worked with all the icons that were formative for me, you know, coming up, starting with Mr. Poitier, you know, and going on with Lou Gossett and Ruby Dee and James Earl Jones and Cicely Tyson. So all of those people were formative for me, you know, who I looked up to. Anybody else I've worked with after that, I've just... maybe somewhere along the line, I stole something from somebody, a phrase or a twist or something, a turn. But my icons are who I just mentioned, you know. So one of my favorite actors, of course, was Anthony Quinn back in the day. But I never got a chance to work with Anthony Quinn, you know. So I come up from a whole different school, and all my icons, not the icons that you would mention, but all of the great actors and actresses I'm working with now are fantastic, but they're two decades away from where I started. Sorry. You know, not that I can't learn from them, don't get me wrong. Right. You know, not that I can't learn from Denzel, is a great actor, you know, and I learned from all over.
And you've worked twice with Viola Davis, right? Like twice in two completely different sort of things, right?
Yeah, she's a powerhouse, you know.
Right.
She's getting now with the, and I'm going to name some names you probably don't know, you'll know Ruby Dee. She's getting what Ruby Dee should have gotten in her day, you know, accolades. Or Francis Foster, or Gloria Edwards. People I'm mentioning now, you won't know because they weren't afforded that accessibility that's been affordable for the people that you would know, a Viola Davis, or Audrey McDonald, or, you know, all of these powerful, powerful women, women up to date.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different time. You see what I'm saying? It's a different time because there were... all of us stand on these people's shoulders of before. And I'm glad that I'm around to mention those other names that came before the ones that are popular now. You see what I'm saying?
They're
names that people don't even know they were there, but boy, were they something.
There's been so much history that you've experienced firsthand in real life and so much history that you've helped make. Especially in these storytelling worlds, and of course working with Chadwick Boseman and Ma Rainey, some of the greatest people who have changed, like my son who just popped in, right? He's not going to know firsthand the experience that people of color of my generation went through, and I don't know firsthand the experience people of color of your generation that you personally have lived through. And I love that you have such this amazing perspective on to be able to tell these stories. And I guess that probably answers the question that I'm about to ask, which is why do directing and producing on top of the acting? But I think if I can answer it a little bit, it's that there are still so many stories that need to be told and so few people left to tell them exactly like you know how to tell them.
You answered it.
So then, okay, so let's go with that then. So directing, executive producing, where are you focusing your attention, your energy when it comes to the creative, the writing, the directing, the producing?
Yeah, more of that. I've got a project. I just finished my documentary, which is on my life. As executive producer, I've got a couple of projects in development, as they say. Those projects are where I've had an incredible 3 years running of some incredible momentum in my acting career, which has been amazing, you know. And I managed to executive produce a couple of pieces. But I'm really going to take, seeing as I've got 3 or 4 things in the can right now that haven't even come out yet, starting with one today, Women of the Movement on ABC. I'm going to let all of those kind of do what they do while I focus behind the camera and get some of these projects out that I'm looking to get out as the captain of the ship.
So you're also currently filming Rustin.
Yeah, you just wrapped that with Netflix? Just wrapped that with Netflix 2 weeks ago.
So that's a biopic on civil rights icon.
Rustin.
Yeah, Rustin, which puts you back in front of the camera with co-star Coleman Domingo.
And Michael Potts.
Oh, God, I love Michael Potts.
And Michael the greatest. And George C. Wolfe.
George C. Wolfe, dude. Oh, God. The company you run with. do you ever look at that? I'm going to take a step back here. Do you ever look at that and you're like, you know what? I'm just like hanging out with Colin Domingo and Michael Potts and George C. Wolfe. And like, I'm having lunch with, Beyonce. And it's no big deal. No big deal. Like, do you look at this and you're like, what is my life?
I, you know, I'm always flattered and so proud of these names that I'm in the company of the names that you just mentioned. And it is wonderful. You know, I love the kick that my wife gets out of that. But my musician, my heroes are musicians, you know. not football players, not actors, you know. I've been in this world since I was a kid, you know. I know Sammy Davis Jr. I started with Sammy Davis. I started with Sidney. But you know what I'm saying? I'm not diminishing anything. Don't get me wrong. But this life, it's the only life I've known. I know it's not a part. It's not out of my realm of expectation to be in the company of the company that I'm in.
Yeah,
because I've been in that company since I was like that. But man, I picked up the phone and talked to George Benson the other day. You know, now that was cool. See, that talk with George Benson. Hey, George. Oh, hey, Glenn. Now, see, that works for me. You know, that flows my boat, you know. So to be able to pick up the phone and call George Benson, you know. So it's all relative, you know what I'm saying? It's all relative.
Oh God. Well, I am honored to be in your company today. And thank you for your time. I want to wrap with three questions I ask everybody to finish up my episodes. The first one, just really simply, is what motivates you?
What motivates me to what?
To wake up in the morning, to create, to act, to do whatever, interpret it however you will.
Oh, horses got to eat. Like, somebody got to feed them.
Cleaning up horse shit.
Horse shit. Just horse shit. And I'm good to go, baby.
So the next question then, what advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now, starting out down a similar path?
Oh, shoot. Trust yourself.
Fair enough. Make choices. All right. So this is the last question, hardest one. If you could only see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
A Broadway show?
Any show.
Lion King.
Broadway or movie?
Huh?
Broadway or movie?
No, Broadway.
All right. Fair. Fair enough.
I took all my kids to see, my kids and my grandkids to see Lion King on Broadway. Or when it came here at the Pantages. And I finally realized, you know, you're taking them all to see it because you want to see it again. You know?
Everybody, please watch Women of the Movement on ABC. It's a phenomenal show. And, of course, it's telling a story that we've got to know, we've got to hear, we got to listen. And for parents out there, teach the good word to your kids. Like, teach the anti-racism. Teach everything we need to be a better society, to be a better people. Follow along with the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at theater_podcast. Music by Jukebox the Ghost. Glenn, thank you so, so much. I really am. When I said it a second ago that I'm honored to spend time with you right now, I really am. I appreciate this interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan. Take it easy, man. See you next time.
Take a deep breath. Make the world a little colorful.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.